Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Yesterday was a historic day in Pennsylvania. The primary election ballot was larger than it's been in years, and new congressional districts drew in new candidates and gave many voters new choices. We now know that Republican Scott Wagner will be running against Democratic incumbent Governor Tom Wolf this fall. Republican Lou Barletta will face Democratic incumbent U.S. Senator Bob Casey. And we know which congressional candidates will be on the November ballot. On today's program, we break it down and look ahead to the fall with Dr. G. Terry Madonna, professor of public affairs and director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College. He's also director of the Franklin and Marshall College poll. Dr. Madonna, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Scott.
If you have a question or comment you'd like to weigh in on the results from yesterday, maybe look ahead to the fall yourself, 1-800-729-7532 is the number to call. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. If you'd like to send an email, smarttalk@witf.org. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. It was a historic day yesterday, Terry. Your takeaway from everything across the state.
Yeah, well, let's start with the Republican Party of Pennsylvania is very delighted this morning because their endorsed candidates for governor and United States Senator won the primary. Of course, I'm talking about Scott Wagner for governor and Lou Barletta for United States Senate. There is no doubt that John Fetterman's victory, if you will, over four other opponents in the Democratic lieutenant gubernatorial primary, including Michael Stack, the incumbent, that's historic. That's not taken place at least since 1974 when governors and lieutenant governors could get a second term. We also have a record number of women who have won congressional primaries. We can talk about that. That's pretty significant. So overall, I think, I have to mention that two Democratic state House members in Allegheny County lost their primaries to candidates endorsed by the Democratic Socialists of America. And of course, Republicans are going to make a big deal about that, just as Democrats are going to make a big deal out of all the Trumpites that were nominated by the Republicans. So we're going to have a wild and woolly affair come the fall.
There's a lot to talk about, but
yes,
let's
sir.
Start with Governor Scott Wagner, the Republican state senator from York County, defeated Paul Mango and Laura Ellsworth. Not a big surprise, but what most Pennsylvanians took away from that primary was the series of negative commercials. So if you look ahead to the fall with Senator Wagner now facing incumbent Governor Tom Wolf, I don't know if there's ever been two polar opposites, personality-wise, politically, than Scott Wagner and Tom Wolf. Would you agree?
Oh, I certainly would. I mean, in Scott Wagner, you have a staunch conservative, no doubt about it. Then when you take a look at his personality, he's what I call Trump-like. And not just because he's a big supporter of President Trump, but in personality and style. And you never quite know what this senator is going to say, just as we never quite know what President Trump is going to say. So the personalities are hugely different. I mean, what can you say about Governor Wolf? I mean, he's reserved, he's staid, he's cautious about what he says. I don't think he ever says a word that's, quote, out of place, end quote. And the personalities of these two candidates are couldn't be more different. And in terms of the policies as well, Wagner's going to has a very conservative agenda that he's put, eliminate property taxes. He doesn't completely. He says no new taxes if he's elected in the 4 years. Let's cut state. He wants to start with zero-based budgeting. You do a lot of state budget stuff on your program, and he wants to start with zero base, which means every program and department in state government starts out with nothing, and they have to defend every nickel. And you know, Governor Wolf has proposed income and sales taxes first in his first two budgets, and we're going to get into the budget season. They're different on social issues, hugely different. This is not arguably going to be a very fascinating governor's election. And then when you add the lieutenant gubernatorial candidates to it, we got even an even more interesting time.
When you compare Senator Wagner to President Trump, one of the things that Senator Wagner did last night with talking with reporters and his supporters, WITF's Capitol Bureau Chief Katie Meyer was among them. He positioned himself as that populist candidate that relates to the people.
Listen, I'm a blue-collar guy. I grew up on a farm. I grew up with a family that didn't have a lot of money. Governor Wolf grew up in an affluent family.
Okay, so and he followed up with that by trying to portray Governor Wolf as a liberal and more comfortable in liberal settings.
He would do great on a college campus or down at the art gallery or hanging around at the country club. But at the end of the day, the people of Pennsylvania want somebody who's going to represent them.
So what do you take away from that?
Well, guess what? I'm just an average Joe, right? That's his argument. Now, look at how Trump won the state by 44,000 votes in 2016. He won the blue-collar working-class voters in small-town and rural Pennsylvania. Does this sound a little familiar? He is going after those same voters by making the argument that a millionaire who spent something like $10 million of his own money to win the Republican nomination, both Wolf and Governor Wolf, as you and I talked about before we went on air, spent about the same amount of money. So they both,
first race,
virtually self-financed their own contest. But it's clear that Wagner's going to present himself as an outsider, as a reformer, as a Trump-like candidate, and he's running against the establishment, and in the form of course, Tom Wolf.
So, I mean, do those two statements right there sound like a strategy right off the bat?
I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned the negativity in the primary, and you wonder if the general election, I mean, I already heard a quote from Governor Wolf this morning saying that Scott Wagner is everything that's wrong with Harrisburg right now, and he listed some of the issues that where Senator Wagner stands. But Senator Wagner talked about the primary and how negative it was, especially with Paul Mango.
Primaries are sort of like family food fights, and for those of you with brothers and sisters, you know that even though you argue, you always come together when it's time to stand up for the family.
So what he's saying there sounds as if he's saying Republicans are going to follow in behind even if they were Mango or Ellsworth supporters.
Right. Let's forget everything that happened in the primary. That's the bottom line. And Mango, by the way, in a tweet did urge the party to come together and support Wagner, which I thought from Republican point of view is a good thing to do. The real problem is how much of the negative considerations that were in those commercials, you and I have talked about those over the course of the campaign, how much do they linger, and how can Wolf, you know, politically speaking, take advantage of them? Or maybe he lets it alone and see what happens in the course of the campaign. But you're exactly right. Wagner does have to overcome the negativity of the Mango campaign, which was among the most vicious I've ever seen in any primary, Democratic or Republican. Typically, Democrats can get more ugly in primaries than Republicans, but not this time.
Mentioned the lieutenant governor's race. John Fetterman defeated incumbent Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack and several other candidates. It's the first time an incumbent lieutenant governor has lost a primary. On the Republican side, Jeff Bardos will be Senator Wagner's roommate on the Republican side. We have a caller, Kelly, here who wants to talk about that lieutenant governor's race. Kelly, you're on the air.
Hi. I was a supporter of John Fetterman's when he actually ran for his Senate campaign in 2016. I'm kind of just wondering how, with kind of the landslide he ran away from the election with in the lieutenant governor's race, how does this affect the election in November?
Great question.
Will it help or hurt Tom Wolf to have a progressive, non-traditional candidate like John Fetterman on the ballot with him?
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Good questions.
Yeah, that's a great question. Now, for our listeners, everyone has to remember that the governor and lieutenant governor now run as a team. They're linked together. Historically, it's hard to find an election in which the lieutenant governor was really responsible for the victory by the gubernatorial candidate. For the most part, people will vote for the gubernatorial candidate, and the lieutenant governor in either party just comes along for the ride. But we do have, I think everybody would agree, one of the most unique personalities in John Fetterman, 6'8", perhaps who won't wear shorts and a T-shirt. Actually, he wore a coat and tie to a bunch of things. And he is by far, Governor Wolf is liberal, make no mistake about it. Now, when you're in the governor's office and you have two chambers of the state legislature controlled by conservative Republicans, you know, you can't exactly have the agenda that you want. And Fetterman's personality is larger than life, just as he is, all 6'8" of him. And he does have, you know, a certain style about him that's very much up front, and the converse for you know, Governor Wolf. I don't think we need to get into a debate, Scott, about who's the more liberal. I think Wolf is certainly liberal. Fetterman himself was endorsed by a whole variety of liberals, including, I guess, Mayor, who knows about Governor Rendell? He's been liberal and conservative, but he did get Bernie Sanders' endorsement. He he's the mayor of Braddock, an old steel town, which he's tried to help revive. He's got the support of the unions like the United Steelworkers. So, but typically, the lieutenant governor just comes along and people vote for the governor. This time we'll have to see, given Fetterman's outsized personality, whether that makes a big difference. We're in uncharted territory there.
Well, the incumbent, Mike Stack, losing, and probably a lot of that can be attributed to the problems that the lieutenant governor had with, there was obviously much publicized incidents where the security detail was taken away, that there were accusations that the lieutenant governor and his wife had verbally abused some of the workers at the lieutenant governor's mansion, state police details, that kind of thing. So obviously that has a lot to do
Relationship with Governor Wolf at all. I mean, zero. If they said more than two sentences to each other in the almost 4 years they served together, it would be a lot. I'm exaggerating, but I'm making the point. And, you know, most lieutenant governors and governors in our modern history have had a pretty good relationship. There's no doubt about it. And lieutenant governors were given a significant assignment in many cases by the governor. Bill Scranton had the energy assignment when Dick Thornburg was governor. Mark Schweiker had emergency management when Tom Ridge was governor. And in this case, Governor Wolf gave Lieutenant Governor Michael Stack literally nothing to do except preside over the Senate, chair the pardons board, and check in on the health of the governor every day. The other point I would make is that in Philadelphia, where you would have expected Stack to roll up huge majorities, he only got 38% of the vote.
That's where he's from, yeah.
Yeah, and Nina Ahman, who was an aide to Mayor Kenney down there, got 27% of the vote. So he couldn't even take advantage of his home base, so to speak, the largest municipality in the state.
Quickly, do you think Fetterman works better with Governor Wolf if that ticket is reelected?
Well, I'll tell you, it's going to be a work in progress. I actually think that Fetterman will do pretty much what the governor wants. Remember, it's the governor's agenda that matters, not the lieutenant governor. And I think Fetterman will understand clearly. It looks like we're still going to have a Republican-controlled legislature in the fall. So after the election, and that's going to temper even a staunch progressive like Fetterman, maybe not in what he argues, but in what the administration can accomplish.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. We're doing the postmortem on yesterday's primary election and looking ahead to the fall with the political analyst from Franklin Marshall College, Dr. G. Terry Madonna. If you'd like to weigh in on yesterday's results, what you think could happen in the fall, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You could also leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page on Twitter. We are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Terry, let's move on to the U.S. Senate race. Republican Congressman Lou Barletta will be facing Democratic incumbent U.S. Senator Bob Casey in November. This wasn't a huge surprise, nope. But maybe a little bit of a surprise in that I saw some of Jim Christiana, the state representative who was running against Lou Barletta, say this was a little bit closer when you consider the amount of money spent than what many people expected. But still, Lou Barletta emerges and takes on Bob Casey, the incumbent. How do you see this one?
Well, I mean, Senator Casey would be, I think, the favorite to win. He's won five elections in the state, four of them by double digits, and he won in 2012 his Senate reelection by, 9 points? I think he's going to be difficult to beat. I'm not saying impossible, but difficult to beat. But here's what's fascinating about this. Lou Barletta, not arguably, is even more of a Trump guy than Scott Wagner, if that's possible. He was, you know, fought the federal government on immigration policies when he was mayor of Hazleton. He co-chaired the Trump campaign in Pennsylvania. He was on the transition team. The president of the United States did robocalls for him and endorsed him. He's, I won't say on issues 100%, he's only 99, 44, 100%. And Casey's one of the staunchest critics of the 49 Democratic senators that you could find. He does agree with the president on trade, on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, getting rid of it and renegotiating NAFTA, and on the steel and aluminum tariffs, but on virtually everything else, he couldn't be further at odds with the president. This is going to be a great referendum on President Trump. And, you know, we'll have to see how it goes. Much of it could depend on whether or not the Democratic wave materializes that we've talked about, everybody's talked about. It certainly doesn't look as big as it looked like it would be, that is a Democratic advantage, back in January on the issue.
Why do you say that?
Well, because on the things that we look at, for example, the president's job performance is up 4 or 5 points. Number two.
In polls.
In polls, yeah. And the generic ballot question, if the election were held today, would you vote for a Democrat for Congress or a Republican? The gap now is only about 5 points. It was 12, 13 points at the end of the 2017 calendar year. But Democrats still look like, A, they're more likely to vote. They filed more candidates, as we've seen all over the place, for state legislature and for Congress, not just in our state, but in other states as well. Democrats seem to be following the election more carefully. In other words, the things that we look at to give us a sense about party enthusiasm and other factors favor the Democrats. Now, it's weakened a bit over what it was at the end of 2017, and there are reasons for that having to do with the Trump presidency. But I still think Senator Casey's going to be not impossible to be sure, but tough to beat.
Something you did mention, though, is that traditionally midterms, 2 years into a president's first term, the party that doesn't have the White House usually does very well.
That's correct. Since the end of the Civil War, back in the 1860s, the party that's held the presidency has lost about 32 seats. If the president's job performance is below 50%, and this is since the end of World War II, the party that held the presidency in the first midterm has lost 36 seats. If we go back to, let's go back to Richard Nixon and move forward, to Barack Obama, first midterm, every president lost seats, with the exception of George W. Bush in 2002, and that was in the wake of the horrific 9/11 attack. So you're right; it is not good for the president's party in particularly in the first midterm.
Senator Casey has kind of a laid-back personality. He's very soft-spoken,
yeah.
But during the time that Donald Trump has been in the White House, it is a much more vocal Bob Casey than I think we've ever heard. And something else that is very noticeable about it is that there's an anger, there's an edge to Senator Casey when he's talking about the president. And that just goes back to what you're saying, is that, you know, there's a stark difference between these two candidates.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I think that Senator Casey, you know, certainly has become much more vocal. You're exactly right. And I couldn't agree with you more about the edge, bordering on an anger at times about what he sees President Trump doing. And conversely, Barletta, you couldn't find a bigger supporter if you ran around 49 other states looking for them than the congressman. By and large, again, this is going to be a referendum on Trump. I think we're going to see the differences come out. Casey will be on the attack. Barletta will have to defend. Barletta will go after Senator Casey for, you know, some of the votes because of the progressive nature of the votes that Casey has cast over the last couple years. The one advantage that Casey has that Hillary Clinton didn't have, Hillary Clinton couldn't find Johnstown and Manassas and Erie. But Senator Casey has kept touch with the working class voters. He's not going to probably win those counties out in the Southwest and up in the Northeast, you know, that have small town and rural parts of our state. But he's going to do better than Clinton did and presumably do well in Philadelphia and the suburbs, where Democrats have done exceedingly well in presidential elections in the last couple of cycles.
Question for you. You say that this U.S. Senate contest will be a referendum on President Trump. Do voters think that way? I mean, I know political analysts voters think that way?
Oh, yeah. Well, look what's going on. What did we see in the primaries in the congressional elections? And what have we seen in the last election cycle or two? Republicans running on who's the most Trumpian. I love that word. Who's the most Trumpian, right? Oh, if you're not enough in favor of the president, you shouldn't be on a Republican ticket. And I have never seen a number of candidates running for Congress in our state on the Democratic side who use the term progressive. Progressive this, progressive that. They don't use the term liberal. I think that might be viewed as pejorative by many voters. And so it's clear what's going on here. If you're a Democrat, you got to be a progressive, and they're going to fight over who's more progressive. That's why one of the candidates, John Morganelli, you know, lost the House primary, a congressional primary.
In Lehigh Valley.
Yeah, because he was accused of not being sufficiently liberal enough. And conversely, the same is true on the Republican side for being a Trumpian, being Trump-like. And that's going to play out in congressional elections, not just in our state, but all over the country. And it's going to play out in our Senate election as well.
Let me go over some of the congressional races. In the new congressional districts, Republican John Joyce won in the 13th. That
Correct.
Was a crowded field there. Democrat George Scott in the 10th. Democrat Denny Wolf and Republican Dan Muser will face off in the 9th. Incumbent Republican Lloyd Smucker emerged in the 11th. And Democrat facing Republican incumbent Tom Marino in the 12th hasn't been determined yet, because that race is too close to call.
Right.
All right, so there are some takeaways there. One of the things I noticed, and we're going to talk about the number of women who won around the state. We didn't have a lot of them here in central Pennsylvania.
Right.
But one of the takeaways that I have is that it seems as though the candidates with the most money to spend on television advertising did pretty well.
Surprise, surprise there, right? And or had, you know, lots of money coming in from outside groups. I mean, Emily's List for women unions on the, you know, also on the Democratic side, conservative interest groups that have weighed in on the election as well. And that's typically the case. Here's what is surprising. We had 84 people run for Congress in the 13 seats. That's the largest number since 1984, when we had 23 seats. Now we only have 18. We had 84 more Democrats than Republicans. And the point I want to make is we had a lot of people who ran, who never held an office before. And what was motivating them? Well, pro-Trump or anti-Trump, you got it? and anti-establishment in the case of many Republicans, upset with the status quo. Pretty much what we hear from a lot of Republican candidates, and on the Democratic side, progressives running because they want to make sure that the party continues to move forward with a progressive agenda in the new Congress, despite the fact that the the Democrats are in the minority in both the House and the Senate.
We have one of those victorious Democrats on the phone right now. George Scott is the Democrat who bested three other candidates in the 10th district. That 10th district is made up of Dauphin County, Northern York County, and Eastern Cumberland County. Reverend Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi, Scott. It's great to be with you.
All right. So, first of all, congratulations. And secondly, what do you attribute your victory?
Well, I attribute it to the 12 months that we spent.
Well, I think we lost him. We're going to have George Scott call back if he can. George Scott will be taking on incumbent Republican Congressman Scott Perry this fall. Hopefully we get a call back that we can talk with George Scott.
What's fascinating about that race is that this is a new district geographically. What's happened to that district is that Southern York, which was represented by Scott Perry, is now in the 11th district, represented by, we'll see what happens. Lloyd Smucker is the congressman, in that district, I'll put it that way, even though it doesn't take over until after the election. And Dauphin County's been added to it. So, and that makes a big difference. Dauphin County was carried by Hillary Clinton. York County, of course, carried by President Trump. So that's going to be one of the more interesting elections, I think, that we'll follow very closely in the fall.
Well, Reverend Scott is back on the line. You're going to have to get a new cell phone before that fall campaign. All right. So you started to answer why you thought that you had won the primary.
Well, Scott, I think we won because, first of all, we've been at this for 12 months, and we worked hard throughout those months to build a grassroots organization of volunteers and to meet with people and to hear what are the issues that are on their mind. And that really is what we saw in the turnout. We did very well in Cumberland and York County. Would have liked to have done better in Dauphin County. We didn't quite have the organization there that we hoped for.
So now it's on to the fall, and as you mentioned, incumbent Republican Scott Perry, he is a formidable candidate.
Well, he certainly is, Scott. As you know, and many others know, he's won three straight races at the state level and three straight races at the federal level, and he's raised a significant amount of money. So we know we've got our work cut out for us, but we've got a great team, a campaign team, and we've got a great base of support. And while it was a hard-fought race here in the primary, all of us have pledged from the beginning to come together as Democrats and to work in a united manner to win in November. And I really think that that's what's going to happen.
How are you different than Scott Perry?
Well, I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I think that's the first and biggest thing. I stand for Democratic values, for progressive positions on a variety of issues, and those are significantly different from Mr. Perry, who's a Freedom Caucus member, which is at the far right end of the political spectrum. So my hope is that we'll be able to focus this campaign on the issues that affect people in their day-to-day lives, things like their health care, their jobs, their education, the amount of gun violence that we've got. Those are issues that people are concerned with, issues that we want to make progress on.
When you were on the program with us, I asked you about your TV commercial throwing the AR-15 into the fire, and there were some members of your own party who were critical of that commercial, saying, that this is, a district that is rural in nature, has a lot of hunters, a lot of gun owners, that would hurt you come the fall.
Well, Scott, I heard that criticism, and I understand where that comes from, but, if you listen to the commercial and folks read the stance that we have made from the beginning, I'm not looking to overturn the Second Amendment. I want us to start a conversation. It's a conversation that the vast majority of voters in Pennsylvania are ready to have, and that's about how do we reduce gun violence. And I've talked with many gun owners who agree that we need to take steps, and we just need to develop a consensus on that, one that the majority of voters here can get behind. And I don't think in the long term that's going to be the deciding factor in this race. I think what's going to decide the race is allowing people to hear which candidate is going to do the best job of representing them in Washington, D.C., and I feel like I'm going to be that person.
George Scott, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Scott.
Well, you noticed that he used the word progressive, didn't he? You know, he's a military guy turned a pastor at the, I think it's the Trinity Lutheran Church in East Berlin. He's been there since 2013. The fact of the matter is that, you know, these military backgrounds of a number of people were part of the campaigns, as we heard, progressive. I mean, that just and we're talking about a district where I think you would agree it's probably far more conservative than you would find down in the Philly suburbs, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, this new district has City of York, City of Harrisburg. Carlisle.
Correct.
What other large...
And Dauphin County went for Hillary Clinton.
Right. So, I mean, it's not... Even though it probably, if you look at registered Republicans versus Democrats, probably more registered Republicans than Democrats, you know, you do have some pockets of where Democrats are in the majority in this district.
Yeah.
So that is one of the districts that, I don't know, I think will be very interesting.
The new district as constituted by the new Supreme Court map, Donald Trump won 52-43%. In the district, and that's largely because of the York component in it.
Northern
York County.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about yesterday's primary election and looking ahead to the fall election with Dr. G. Terry Madonna, political analyst and pollster at Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster. And we'd like to hear from you as well. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can also leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page on Twitter. We're at Smart Talk WITF. Again, the phone number 1-800-729-7532. We have a couple of emails here, Terry. Aaron in Dillsburg wants to know, how did turnout compare to other midterm primaries?
Well, I haven't taken a look at that yet.
Might be too soon to tell.
Yeah. My sense about it is that it was lower than what we expected. Midterm primaries, about 20% of the voters. You know, it depends on, you know, more state issues than local issues. We did have probably a higher turnout down in the Southeast, where we had a larger number of competitive primaries.
The most populated part of the state, too.
Yeah, that's right. And remember, on the Democratic side statewide, there was no... Governor Wolf ran unopposed. Senator Casey ran unopposed. And the lieutenant gubernatorial race is not, quote, a big draw in that sense. We know Fetterman won, but people don't just show up to vote for lieutenant governor in the Maine. I'm not saying that some people didn't. And so at the state level, we only had what? The Republican gubernatorial primary. So I think the turnout was lower than I thought. We might get to 25-30%, but I've not seen any numbers on that, and I've not calculated it.
Anecdotally,
yes.
Just my own observation of what people were saying on social media, it did not appear to be as high as what many people expected.
Yes, I think that I've heard the same thing.
Did yesterday's storms that came through Pennsylvania have any impact at all?
Minor at best. I think people that get motivated, the good news, if there's any good news in a storm, that kind of storm, and there's no good news in it, it was fast moving. So it came and it went.
But it did hit most of the state.
And it may have just said to some people, I'm not going to bother. I'm not getting out of here. But I don't think it didn't affect the outcome. It may have affected the outcome, meaning who won, but it may have had some marginal effect on turnout.
We have an email from Dale. It says, it seems Trump, who finds campaigning in Pennsylvania convenient and winning Pennsylvania in 2020 essential, is going to have to go all in on Wagner and Barletta. It seems to me the key is Western PA, from putting Metcalf, he's talking about State Representative Daryl Metcalf, right, on the defense in Butler County, to using Fetterman to offer a bottom-up populist message to people in Greene and Washington County, that southwest corner, especially sharing a media market with West Virginia's 1st Congressional District, for the first time in a long time, those disaffected voters are going to see a full slate of Democrats acknowledging their existence and fighting for their vote. I might have to invite Dale to be on the program.
Yeah, that's a great question. Now, here's the problem. Rural and small-town Pennsylvania has become Republican. Hillary Clinton only won two counties, Scott, west of the Susquehanna River. Center County, Penn State, Allegheny County, obviously Pittsburgh, big help there. The fact of the matter is, when you get to Washington and Fayette and Westmoreland and Greene and Cambria and those counties, Beaver, out in the western part of the state, even if they have Democratic registrations, the voters out there are voting Republican. Fetterman's liberalness is not going to be helpful out there, I don't think. Yeah, the populist side of it, the anti-government side of it works, but remember, he's running with an incumbent, an entrenched incumbent like Governor Wolf, who nobody could call a populist, I think you would agree, or an outsider. I'm not convinced that that message will hold. I do agree with the email, in the sense that, and I think this is important for Republicans to win statewide, they need to do well in the southwest and northeast, in those areas of the state where we have rural and small town voters that have shifted to become Republicans over the last decade.
Let's talk about southeastern Pennsylvania for a moment. Southeastern Pennsylvania traditionally has been a moderate Republican area.
Right.
The county surrounding the city of Philadelphia. Philadelphia is solid Democrat. Democrats win there all the time. It's very difficult for a Republican to win, a statewide race, or even it's hard for even on the state legislative races, even though there are Republicans there. But there have been some changes in southeastern Pennsylvania in recent years, in that those moderate Republicans have tended to switch their votes over to the Democratic side. Have we seen a sea change in southeastern Pennsylvania?
Over the last decade, absolutely. Three of the four counties, Bucks, Montgomery, and Delaware, now have Democratic voter registration edges. Montgomery's the most Democratic of the four. In addition, if you go back to the municipal elections last year, Democrats were successful in winning countywide elections, which is something that's in some respects was historic. I'm not saying Democrats didn't win some here and there, and they particularly won them in Chester and Delaware counties. One of the problems of the many that the Republicans have is that, I'll say this slowly so I get it out right, white, college-educated, female Republicans have been deserting the party. And they've been part of the Democratic coalition in terms of the voting. Hillary Clinton won all four of those counties in 2016, plus Philadelphia. If you had just looked at that vote, Philly and the four suburban counties, and nothing else, you would have thought Hillary carried the state. But the Republican voters and the Democratic voters in small town and rural Pennsylvania, the turnout there was so great, and Trump's percentage, 70% in 23 of those counties, made a difference in giving him the 44,000 vote victory. I don't want to go too much in detail here, but you're exactly right. The suburbs of Philadelphia have been trending Democratic, obviously, in statewide elections, and that's a real challenge for the Republicans. Conversely, the Democrats have a challenge in small town and rural Pennsylvania, in counties where I never thought we'd have a Republican state senator in Erie, Pennsylvania, and Johnstown. to give you a good example of that.
I bring that up because we are talking about the most populated counties in the state for the
Correct.
Most part, with the exception of Allegheny County in western Pennsylvania. And I also think back to Ed Rendell's first victory in a primary over Bob Casey running for governor on the Democratic side, that Ed Rendell won seven counties.
Yeah.
And won the primary
won. Yeah.
pretty handily
yeah.
because he won those seven most populated counties.
You go where the votes are. I mean, you know, that there's no doubt about it. And but again, I want to point out that Hillary did very well. It depends which voters are more motivated. See, we go back to that point I made earlier. Right now, it looks like Democratic voters are more motivated. I'm not suggesting to our listeners that that's going to stay the same way. I'm not predicting who's going to win. I said it looks like Governor Wolf and Senator Casey are in a good position to win. I'm not predicting they will win by any stretch. We're too far, 5 months away from the general election. A lot can happen.
I'm glad you pointed that out, that we're 5 months away, because there will be a lot of people in this state who will be happy not to see TV commercials that
yeah.
we've seen over the last few weeks.
Or maybe hear us talk about politics
right.
for a couple of months.
Oh, I got to tell you, after talking to 22 candidates over the last 3 weeks, it's going to be a nice respite here.
Yeah.
We have about 10 minutes left if you'd like to get in on the conversation. 1-800-729-7532 or send an email to smarttalk@wytf.org. I want to circle back. Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I was. You just heard Terry whisper to me, "Women," and that wasn't because that has to do with the topic. Not that that's what he wants to talk about.
Yeah,
but anyway, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about.
I do
about.
Want to talk about women in politics.
But I wanted to circle back to that because, as you said right up front, that it is historic. I mean, this is a state that in its 18 congressional districts, right now we have no women in any of the Pennsylvania delegation.
You got it.
And we may have as many as, I've seen estimates of seven.
Eight.
Come the fall. Talk mm-hmm. about that. What happened?
Well, let's start with the fact that we've never elected a woman governor. We've never elected a woman U.S. senator. And we've not had a woman in our 18-person delegation since State Representative or Congresswoman Allison Schwartz from then
who
the
ran
13th,
for governor, yeah.
ran for governor in 2014. None. So what happened in this primary was that eight women won primary elections to represent their respective parties in Congress or in the fall election. Let me put it that way. Of the eight, one, Pearl Kim in the 5th district, she ran unopposed, Republican. The other seven were Democrats. Seven Democrats. So let's remove the four Democratic incumbents right now, male Democratic incumbents. We're going to get rid of four of them.
They're retiring. They're leaving.
No. Four
okay,
who won renomination.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay.
Thank you for the help here. Four who won renomination. So that leaves us with 14 seats for the Democrats to nominate candidates. 50% of them, seven of them, are women. That we have never had that before in the history of the state.
Why?
Now, well, because there are probably several factors. Me Too, the horrific I'll call it what it was, a massacre in Parkland in South Florida. 17 kids, you know, shot, killed. We have the gun control issue, which looms large out of that. We have the anti-Trump feeling among many women. Bottom line here is 50% of the Democratic candidates for Congress, if we exclude the four male incumbents who won renomination, 50% are women. And here's what's particularly interesting. If we go down to the Philly suburbs, we were just talking about those. In three of the districts that we could see a change, in the 4th district, which is in basically in Montgomery County, the 5th, which is basically in Delaware County, the 6th, which is Chester and part of Berks County, all three nominees are females in the Democratic side. Now, think about that for a moment. And similarly, if we go up to the 7th, Charlie Dent's who left Saturday a week ago, I think, who said, I'm out of here, a Republican. There, another woman is the nominee of the Democratic Party. Now, we do have some, you know, in the 11th district where I live, Jess King will take on incumbent Lloyd Smucker.
Yeah, she was unopposed yesterday.
That's correct. And we have, you know, Susan Bowser, who's running against an incumbent, Gled Thompson, in the 15th. So we have women, you know, running all over the state. But the proportion of women that won in these competitive seats in Philadelphia and up in the Lehigh Valley is really amazing. And these are going to be very important nationally watched elections because of how competitive they're going to be.
So when you say nationally watched, does that translate into a lot of money coming from outside groups into the state?
There is no doubt about it. And progressive groups like Emily's List weighed in the primaries down there as well, and other groups. We're going to have unions, and we're going to have conservative business groups on the other side of it. There's no doubt about it. And here's what's really important. The Democrats need to pick up 23 seats to win control of the Congress. So we're going to be talking all through the summer and the fall. We talked about, can we get a respite from this? Of three seats in the Philly burbs that are going to be on everybody's list to watch, and probably two other seats, Scott. Two other seats. Five seats that will be watched very carefully. Pennsylvania is one of the top five states that will determine which party controls the House of Representatives in the fall, or I should say after the fall election.
So in the big picture, that's what a lot of people will be looking at, is flipping 23 seats to give Democrats control. I have a sense that President Trump will be campaigning in Pennsylvania pretty often.
Oh, I think you're right. And the other, remember we used the term progressive throughout this interview? Guess what, these women are progressives.
And Bert, so that, does that mean Bernie Sanders is
Bernie Sanders
will be here pretty often as well.
And he's endorsed some of these candidates, by the way.
We have an email here from a woman in Hummelstown. Mm-hmm. Says, as an educated woman, I don't feel as though gender of the candidate should be so important as the issues.
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I mean, women are a majority of the population, yet, you know, there's a paucity of women in Congress, and that's become a pretty big deal. There, I think 84 women in the House of Representatives out of 435, that's something like 19.4%. And
women, well, and it's such a big deal here in Pennsylvania because
it's a big deal.
We have so few.
That's right.
And we went from zero to possibly eight.
Well, as you mentioned. Certainly, I would be shocked if we didn't have two or three women in the delegation. But I don't disagree with the email that issues are obviously important. But there is a concern, I think, that there's no gender balance. Why? And there's been a tough time in Pennsylvania. It's not been a friendly state for women for lots of complicated reasons that we can talk about. So it's just historic when, as you point out, when we begin to talk about the addition of women into higher office in Pennsylvania.
We only have a minute or so left, and Terry, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. So, I mean, if you had to paint a picture in 60 seconds or less of what to expect this fall in Pennsylvania, what would it be?
I think we're going to have an extraordinary series of elections for Senate, Governor, and Congress. It's going to be, in a larger sense, Donald Trump is not on the ballot, but he's going to be here in virtually every way, shape, and form. I think virtually all of these elections are going to end up being, to some extent, a referendum. We will see two very different views of the role of government, with progressive Democrats making one set of arguments and Trump Republicans making another set of arguments. Very little room in the middle, very little room for compromise. The choices before the voters will be quite stark.
you know, we really didn't talk about whether there are any moderate candidates out there. And just looking down at my list, we have two former cabinet secretaries, Democrat Denny Wolf and Republican Dan Muser, former revenue secretary in the 9th Congressional District. They've both been described as moderates.
As moderates, There are some. I'm not arguing they're not, but boy, they're few and far between.
Dr. G. Terry Madonna, Franklin Marshall College, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about sports betting. U.S. Supreme Court made a ruling earlier this week that will legalize bets on sports, and we'll be talking about that on tomorrow's show.